critically analyzing national affairs. This is State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McClain on today's News Talk. TNT.
All right. Happy Friday, everybody, if you're here in the United States. And I guess happy Saturday to our friends and colleagues over at Today's News Talk, over at the Mothership. Want to give a big, quick thank you to our team in the studio over there and all our colleagues, the other hosts here, producer Kimberly. Everybody, thank you so much. We really appreciate everything you do. We would not be able to do the amazing things that we do here at TNT without all of you. So big thanks. And if you want to support TNT, you can do that at our website, tntradio.live. We've got donate links. We've got a store. We got a calendar. We'd love to see you get involved with our calendar. If you have any events coming up or looking for an event to attend, you can find them over there at the website. And of course, hello to you in the interactive live chat room. Timothy and I are very pleased that you're with us today. Timothy, as we roll into the second hour here, we've got a Republican out of Tennessee, Tim Burchett, Wednesday sent a letter to House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer requesting an investigation into congressional Democrats' history of pressuring private companies to shut down the speech of those with different ideologies than theirs. So the freedom of speech argument is still rolls on, as we're seeing freedom of speech being quashed by the House and the Senate with their odious so-called TikTok ban.
Yeah, and this is good as far as it goes, but that's just the thing, Brian, as far as it goes, right? We've all become inured to the sternly worded letter and to the investigation that discovers all the crimes, and then a criminal referral sometimes is even given to DOJ, and then it's a dead letter before it even arrives. It's like the impeachment of Secretary Mayorkas at the Senate. Chuck Schumer did what I said that Mitch McConnell should have done and completely rejected it. No, we're not going to have a trial for that. You know, Democrats do with impunity what Republicans are too timid to try.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So we'll keep an eye on that one, like all these things, but we have low expectations per usual when it comes to constitutional issues. Moving on to Baltimore, Timothy, did you see this? A Baltimore principal allegedly had a racist rant posted, but it turns out it was an AI fake, a deep fake. And not just that, but the salacious part was it was created by a colleague. So it was a 42-second voice recording purportedly of a Maryland high school principal in the midst of a racist rant, derided black students as ungrateful and unable to test their way out of a paper bag. Just so you know, some pretty poor things that you wouldn't expect from a high school principal. Well, it turns out the recording wasn't what it was seen, what it seemed. And Baltimore County Police, well, they've discovered a school employee, and investigators charged him Thursday had used an artificial intelligence tool to fabricate the audio with the intention of falsely depicting Principal Eric Eiswirt as a bigoted and anti-Semitic person. Isn't that crazy?
Well, and this is exactly what we predicted months ago with these AI tools, Brian, and in deep fake technology. You know, you're going to see videos, you're going to see audios that are faked. Fortunately, the police did some due diligence and didn't jump the gun on this one. And instead of breaking down the principal's door, they did a forensic examination of this tape, and they realized, you know, this video, and they realized, hey, wait, no, this has all the hallmarks of a deep fake. And sure enough, digital fingerprints all over it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the hubris of this guy was, his name was DeZorn Darin, age 31, the former athletic director at Peeksville High School. He's been taken into custody, and he was about to fly to Houston, and they detained him because he was carrying a firearm. So he's got, you know, he's kind of a dodgy person as it is already. And then to levy an, you know, a deep fake attack against a colleague or a former colleague like that with clear malice really does send a warning sign when it comes to AI and the type of people, you know, that might use it for nefarious purposes.
Yeah, we really need to have zero tolerance policy with regard to any form of blackmail.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, for all, you know, I spoke about that calendar, and I'll remind you that for all the latest community events, rallies, marches, festivals, and fundraisers happening near you, you need to visit our What's On Events calendar on the TNT website. That's tntradio.live, and stay in touch on today's news talk, TNT.
Connecting the dots, painting the bigger picture.
They always have great conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
President Biden's latest proposal to hike the top capital gains tax rate to its highest level in more than a century is facing some pretty heavy criticism, rightly, from experts who warn such an action could significantly harm the U.S. economy. Joining us now is Eric Rice from the Rice Report. Eric, welcome back to State of the Nation. The headline I'm reading here reads, Biden's capital gains tax proposal could crush the economy. Those are pretty strong words. What do you think?
Well, I think there's a misprint in there. The word could should not be in that sentence. It should be removed. It will destroy the economy. The interesting thing about it is the workarounds that have already happened in 24 hours. So what they're trying to do with this is twofold, because there's the Moore case that's going to the Supreme Court in June, and that wants to tax unrealized gains at 25%. This would be realized gains. So for those who don't know, I invest $10,000 into something, I make $10,000. It's now worth $20,000, but I haven't cashed it out. So without having to cash it out, the government wants me to go into my checking account and pay them $4,400 for the privilege of making $10,000, which is a complete contradiction of freedom. You know, we already live in an environment right now where we have a government that prints money out of thin air while we work hard to pay their debts back. And in the middle of this, we have to invest in assets. I mean, that's one of the problems of an inflationary central bank system, is that in order to outpace inflation, you can't sit in cash. So in a country where we're forced to make risky investments just to keep pace with their spending, we now can't even take in our own gains from this. This is a really dangerous thing. But what it's doing, right? I had two conversations earlier today with lending groups that are like, well, if they have this unrealized gains tax, what we're going to do is we're just going to create a lending program. And if they go to 44% of realized gains, we'll lend against assets so no one ever has to sell a stock, bond, commodity, real estate, or Bitcoin, which I thought was a great workaround from everyone. Because when you pay interest back on a loan, not only is it tax-free, you're also going to get a tax break for paying that interest. So the market is always, you know, there's a lot of clever people in this world that figure things out really quickly. And this is just another communist attempt to seize our assets. I mean, there's no other way to frame this.
You know, Eric, these leftists aren't as smart as they think they are, and they belie a fundamental lack of understanding of human behavior. I'll never forget back a couple decades ago, they were going to put a luxury tax here in New York on yachts and whatnot. And guess what they did? They drove shipyards out of business. They drove builders out of state. Now, across the river in New Jersey, all of a sudden, that's where all the yacht building business went. New York tax base took a hit, both from personal income taxes and business taxes. These people think that rich people got rich by accident, or, you know, it's funny. They always talk about the 1%, and they never tell you how fluid that is, how many people move in, how many people fall out of that 1% every single year. Very few people stay in it for the long haul, and they completely disregard human behavior. They just see a pot of money, and man, they start salivating.
Well, they disregard logical human behavior, but what they really are good at is managing emotional human behavior.
True. Yeah.
Because they get these bills passed. I mean, you got to remember that, like we talked about our last episode, congressmen, senators, even the president, they're nothing more than salespeople for the central bank. That's all they are. They convince people that what they're doing is good. So, you know, tax the rich, which they think is a great idea, basically guarantees that you will never be rich. And the rich will find a way around this. Guaranteed. It's already happened in 24 hours. I've talked to two people that have already had conversations with family offices and big venture groups that they want to put together a multi-billion dollar lending structure so that people never have to cash out on a stock, which means they'll never have to pay realized gains. So they'll just continue to take those profits. It's pretty genius, actually. I was very excited about that phone call earlier today.
Yeah, that really is genius, and it's good to see that, you know, a communistic takeover like this, an attempt, you know, another nudge into socialism, is already being refuted by people in the financial industry. That's really good, because we're talking about people's nest eggs here, right? They're saying in this article, Biden's coming out with the highest proposed capital gains tax in 100 years, and it could lead to many Americans paying rates of more than 50% on income. I mean, it's pretty egregious, isn't it?
Well, the Californians are like 50%, hold my beer, right? I mean,
Yeah.
they're already paying 50% just to breathe air. You know, the
Right.
interesting thing about this whole structure is, number one, I don't think we're nudging towards communism or social. I think we're in socialism. You know, when I die, the state is going to take 45% of my assets. My children won't get it, but there will certainly be a genderqueer class in Pakistan that will, you know, theoretically thrive. But more importantly, those rich people who they're not supposed to be taxing, they're going to get a bulk of it because of crony capitalism, defense contractors, and road builders. It's such a sham in this country right now. And the beautiful thing is, almost all the people I encounter, which is not your normal people, they know this already. So the Patriots, you know, it's I said this 2 years ago on one of my shows. I said, listen, we're past Republican and Democrat. We're in Patriot and Communist. And it's very clear. And there are a lot of patriots that are all around this country, from the highest levels of wealth down to, you know, a guy who digs ditches for minimum wage. There are just people fed up with the system everywhere. And that's a great sign for us all. The more they show their colors, the more people realize it, and the faster we can unify and get these guys out of the way.
Absolutely. Eric, one thing you said made my blood run cold, though. 35 years ago, I worked for a mutual fund company. And so I know a little bit about how these things work. And you're talking now, they're proposing taxing unrealized gains. So if your asset value appreciated, if your home market value appreciated, all of a sudden you've got to come up with this extra tax, even if you don't have cash. And something tells me that when the real estate market crashes and that home is no longer worth that much money, they're not going to be giving you a tax deduction, are you? They're going to say, oh, yo, you now you get to pay a lower level of tax this year.
Yeah, I don't envision them ever giving us a refund on overreach of taxation. I just haven't seen that in my lifetime, and I don't expect to see it until we have some sort of a complete house cleaning in Washington, D.C. I mean, a complete house cleaning.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, it's not even just like the social that you see this. It's like the worst parts of all of autocratic and totalitarian, you know, systems all being used at once. You see fascism in the way that lobbyists and regulation agencies work together with politicians. You see signs of socialism. I mean, look at our DOD budget. It has any of your representatives ever asked you what you thought about, you know, putting that much money into the military, and or explained why it's that much money and how much of that's going to foreign countries? I mean, it doesn't get much more socialistic than that, or fascistic when you look at the Twitter files or something like that.
Well, the fascism runs rampant. So in defense spending, you can see things like in a defense budget. And thankfully, I have some friends who work for defense contractors, and I've asked them, how much does the military pay for a ballpoint pen? You know, the same Bic pen I can get on Amazon for 39 cents, or it's probably $4 now, but it used to be 39 cents. They'll pay about $90 for it. So it's all just this profit-driven crony capital that drains out all the tax dollars, and then the poor end up paying for everything. It's really an awful situation. But Timothy, going back to your statement, imagine the confusion in a mutual fund, right? So you have a mutual fund, it's December 30th. The end of the year is coming up. Your unrealized gain is due. You don't have cash. So what you have to do is liquidate in the mutual fund, causing another taxable event. That fund manager has to liquidate the shares in the market, creating another taxable event. And then once the money is withdrawn to make the payment, it then also has an additional tax. The word tax, I think the most foolish people in this country are the ones who are proud to pay their taxes because they still believe it goes to roads and waterways and school systems. It's just a lie. It's all being paid back to a central bank who literally has their hands around your throat, and the squeezing is getting tighter and tighter by the minute.
Very well said. Very well said, Eric. Check out the Rice Report. Eric, anywhere else you want to point people to keep in touch with you?
Oh, that's the easiest way. I've given up online somewhat. I don't post too much. There's too many lunatics out there. I love you all, but you're lunatics. And I don't have enough time for it. So I'm trying to do everything I can on the Rice Report. We're on YouTube, Rumble, iTunes, iHeartRadio, all over the place. And I appreciate you guys having me on this evening.
All right. We appreciate you being here. Check out the Rice Report. It's on all good platforms. This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT's Pella Neuroth-Taylor.
Why do we go for the sanctity of the state borders, which is Zelensky's argument? He's invaded us, he said. He's invaded Ukraine. But Ukraine is not a monolithic country. It's a country where the eastern half wants to belong to another country and are affiliated to that country. So should you go with the state border or the loyalties of the people? And in our sort of soft, dovish world, as it were, I mean, state border was a sort of Westphalian thing, I guess, in that cold, cynical, aristocratic diplomacy. But now we go with people's sympathies, you know, it's all supposed to be Democrats. But very few Western journalists talk about the truth about who the Donbass people are and where their loyalties are, and the fact that they've always lived there. They're not invaders or intruders.
Pella Neuroth-Taylor on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. The Net Zero Con will leave millions of citizens dependent on state handouts. It isn't a theory. It's an agenda. There is no climate emergency. On air 24/7. This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Brian, before I introduce our next guest, I wanted to report, as we were at break, our good friend, Nebraska State Senator Brian Hardin, sent me some horrific video and photographs. Hail the size of a lacrosse ball in his fist, in his hand, and videos from tornadoes sweeping across US I-80 in western Nebraska in the Scotts Bluff area. Massive, massive tornadoes. So our prayers for everybody on the high plains that those tornadoes miss civilization.
Yes, absolutely. We've seen enough tornado damage already this season. I woke up this morning and noticed that the Texas Storm Chasers channel was doing tornado warnings just north of me, towards Waco, moving northwest. So we had a little bit of a scare here this morning, too. It was just north of us.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's that season. It's also the season, it's the silly season on television these days. And joining us now is America's longest serving television news director and the first executive producer of Court TV, Steve Cohen. Steve, welcome back to State of the Nation.
It's good to see both of you, and our prayers go out to the people in those tornadoes. I've lived through a few of them and they're frightening. So let's hope nobody gets hurt.
Indeed. Yeah. You know, Steve, in your book, 50 Years in the Newsroom, A Eulogy, you told some fascinating stories. But did you ever think we'd live to see Democrats try to steal an election in broad daylight by locking up the Republican nominee?
No, I have to say, I never thought that the truth would wind up politicized the way it has in American media. So when you look at what you're referring to, of course, is what we call lawfare now, right? The use of what happens in court in order to be a political weapon against a, you know, presumptive nominee and probably the next president if things go as many of us hope they will. But I think that the reason for it is because you have mainstream media who's tied into the Democratic National Party. And basically we have sort of a single voice, single mind perspective on what that group wants us to see. And that, you know, doesn't just permeate law. It also is permeating our campuses right now in terms of this idea that there's a genocide going on in Gaza, which of course is a misnomer and a horrible misnomer.
It's interesting. How many, The thing that bothers me about the campus reporting, Steve, is we've seen agitators on both sides, and oftentimes the agitators, you know, the same sort of people we saw during Floyd riots and BLM. And I get the impression that there are students whose voices are not being heard, generally all of them, and the agitation voices on both sides of this topic seem to be getting a lot of camera time and generating a lot of headlines. Have you seen any of these videos of, there was a Al Jazeera report that was leaked recently, and they were shot from inside a bus, and they had some guy talking about how they had $50,000 put into putting a bunch of people out there.
I just think that when you, and Tim as well, Timothy on this, please chime in, but there's just no question that what's happening on the campus is supported by forces that are not about the campuses, right? There's no question that these folks are planned and paid provocateurs. They are sympathizers with Hamas. They are not just students. George Soros is funding some of it. There's just no question about it. And these are professional agitators. So when you talk about, is there balance and is there a narrative? There is a narrative, and it's the narrative of that the Palestinians are involved in the genocide, and that what is happening in Gaza is inappropriate. And you know what? Most of the students that are there don't even realize that they're being used as tools of a liberal progressive viewpoint. Timothy, you see where I'm coming from?
Oh, well, there's an interview with some protesters down at NYU that had come down from Columbia, and those two girls, it's like, seriously, you're university students? They admitted to not being educated on the issue, and they didn't know what was going on. They were just told to go down to NYU and protest. But Steve, you're, you know, experienced enough to remember when the Berlin Wall fell and all of a sudden the Soviet Union crumbled. One of the revelations was that the anti-war protests in the United States in the 1960s, and all the groups, Students for a Democrat Society, Black Panthers, the Weather Underground, all funded by the Soviet Union. We're seeing the same thing now. And on both sides, these people are being funded by outside organizations. And yet you had Jill Stein out there in front of Columbia, all upset because Columbia had locked the gates. See, for people that don't know, Columbia University is in the middle of New York City, and you actually have to walk up steps to get to the grass where all the tents were. And of course, I posted on X, who paid for the tents? They're all identical tents. Who paid for them? College kids don't have those tents. And Jill Stein's out there saying, this is horrible, a horrible day for free speech. They've locked the gates. And I just responded back to her, oh my goodness, a private institution barred outside agitators from private property? Oh, the humanity.
Well, that's right. And I think it goes even further than that, because when you get right down to it and you look at the Hamas narrative, which of course is backed by Iran, right? The world's most rogue state trying to disrupt everything. The end of the day, if those students were protesting an African-American cause, were protesting an LGBTQ cause, or any other popular cause, what would have happened to any of the debate that we've seen on mainstream media? It would have gone away. It would have dissipated and gone the other way. But instead, because these folks are against Jews that have been a target for over 5,000 years, they get away with it. Because for some reason, the Jewish people and Israel as a state do not fit the narrative of fairness. And the result of that, I think, is probably one of the most horrific misuses of American media that we've seen in generations.
I want to dig into that. We've got some incoming headlines, but we're going to continue this conversation right after the news on today's News Talk, TNT.
Now,
I've got news for you.
Give me the news.
Give it to me.
Give me the news.
TNT Radio News.
News Flash.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. New York State Supreme Court Justice Juan Merchan has ordered former President Donald Trump to attend a court hearing on May 1st to address allegations that he violated the gag order. The judge warned that failing to appear could result in Trump's immediate arrest and imprisonment for contempt of court. New York City Councilman Robert Holden expressed strong concerns over protests at Columbia University that he perceives as supporting terrorism, specifically referencing the group Hamas.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Steve, one of the charges I think is most unfair is this allegation of genocide when, by Hamas's own admission, fewer civilians have been killed than combatants. Contrast that with how we reacted after Pearl Harbor, killing over a million people in one day with the bomb dropped on Hiroshima. Contrast that with what we did after 9/11 and the many millions that were killed in Mosul and elsewhere. There are certainly concerns about genocide in the world, but I think that the 2 million Arab Israelis would say that they kind of like the rights they have there in Israel.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think this is not just a semantic argument. I mean, you know, I hear a semantic argument often on media, which is, well, genocide doesn't really mean that. But you have to go past the definitions. Genocide was a word that had to be invented after the Holocaust. Already there had been a genocide by Armenians in the early 20th century, and that was a true genocide. And then the Jews, and then, of course, many, unfortunately, sub-Saharan African states in the 20th century have also suffered from true genocide. This is a military action, without any question, as a retaliation to what happened on October 7th. That's all that's happening here. This is not a genocide against the Palestinian people. And I think what American media continues to avoid is a discussion of the fact that Hamas does not agree to have a two-state solution based on the rules that are set by the United Nations and the State of Israel. They've been offered a seat at the table if and only if they get rid of their weapons and they agree to negotiate and get rid of the hostages. Well, that was turned down again 2 weeks ago. And remember, on October 6th, they were in a ceasefire, and they broke the ceasefire on October 7th. When you look at these simple facts, you're right, these are not in the discussion that's happening in American media, except on places like for you two gentlemen. So I appreciate that. If I may, I want to get a little piece of history in here. So in 1954, we had separate but equal in the United States of America. The Supreme Court ruled in Brown versus Topeka. That's over. As soon as the Supreme Court ruled, white bigots came out and tried to keep African-American students from going to school. There was a guy named Ike Eisenhower. He happened to be president of the United States, right? And here's what he did. He said to the 101st Airborne, you guys go down to any place where they're trying to keep those young students from going to school, and you arrest them, incarcerate them, and get them away from those kids. Eisenhower, 54. Joe Biden, 2024. What's wrong with this picture? You know, you have to shake your head.
Yeah. I want to ask you about the Trump trial, Steve. You know, I saw the funniest headline today. They're saying that the RNC chair is saying that that the trial is fueling $1 million a day in small donations. Can you comment on that? I mean, this is something that we've talked about before, how this is all going to backfire, all this lawfare is going to backfire and put a whole bunch of followers, voters, and money in the coffers of Donald Trump.
It's interesting you bring it up today because the CNN, and we know what CNN's about in terms of their bias, they just published a poll just this afternoon, I think a very reliable poll of over 2,000 citizens. 13% of this national poll believe that Donald Trump is being treated fairly or that he's being treated as any other American citizen would be. And that's across all lines of political lines, right? So you're looking at 13% of the population they polled. And I think that's what's happening. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, and I know Dr. Phil, who was a jury analyst, right, today also did a program, great program on it. It's not the trial, it's what the jurors think. And when you get inside that jury room, what are they thinking? And Phil was saying, you know what I think they're thinking? That this is unfair. That this is maybe the one, another travesty of the legal system. We know hush money is not illegal. We know trying to cover up is not illegal. We know that there's no federal statute that's allowed in the state court, and there's no state court consideration that has been broken. So where is the foundational level for this trial? It isn't there. Guess what? America gets that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the American people are fundamentally fair-minded. Even people on the left, people that might have policy differences with the president, they're fundamentally fair-minded. And also, people can't comprehend how the Biden administration is literally shredding the Constitution. But some GOP state lawmakers have appealed to the Supreme Court because the Constitution very clearly states, Steve, that elections are to be the province of the state. And Joe Biden is usurping their power. I think we've got another document called the Declaration of Independence that talks about usurpations.
I like your sense of history, Timothy. I mean, I think there's no question that when you look at the documents that are the foundational reason that we're able to have our freedoms, that the Biden administration has not only pulled and tugged at it, but they've decided to rip it up. And this sense of ripping at what is the essential fabric of our democracy, I think, is frightening to a lot of Americans. You know, we just want to get on with our lives. We watch the news because we want to be informed, but we care so much about the other issues that allow us to be free and live the lives that we want and to pursue what we used to call, you remember this thing called the American dream, guys, right? We used to have this thing called the American dream. What's happened to that dream? And where is it on American media? And when is it going to show up again? And I think that, just as you say, I think that a lot of Americans are saying, well, maybe Donald Trump's the way. Maybe there's a way back.
Yeah. Yeah. That American dream, quite fleeting. You know, when I was growing up, Steve, I got to tell you, I always thought, OK, my thinking, you know, as a 90s kid, 80s and 90s kid growing up was, I want to be like my parents. I want to, you know, have a family and have a career that I like and make money. And for me, the path to that was finish high school in good standing, go to four-year college, finish that in good standing, you know, get a postgraduate degree, and then get a job that makes six figures. And I did all that. I did all that. And once, as soon as I got the job that made that amount of money, I realized, wow, I'm still living paycheck to paycheck in California here in 2008. And then the housing market crashed. And for me, the American dream was pretty much done, at least the old my old version of the American dream. And then I had to switch it to, well, maybe I can at least pursue life, liberty, and happiness. And I think that's kind of where we're stuck right now. What do you think about that?
I don't think that's different from what the majority of Americans think, and from all backgrounds and you know, in all countries that we've all come from to get here. I think it's multi-generational. I think there's a deep feeling, it's cellular, that what you just described is what we all should have a shot at. It doesn't mean we're all going to get the same things out of life, but it does mean that we have a propensity to be able to achieve something that we wish to the best of our ability. And without having to have the government pick us up by our bootstraps all the time. We want the government to be there to protect us and to give us the opportunity and to guarantee that the freedoms that we need to get there are there. And I think that's what's at stake in this election, is that so many Americans are saying, are those things still there for me? Or do I have to think one way? Do I have to say one thing? Am I afraid to be a Jew? Am I afraid to be a conservative? Am I afraid to be an African-American lawyer who believes that conservatism matters, like Clarence Thomas? I mean, when you get to that point where you're questioning whether who you are and who you want to be is allowed in your society, then society has lost its way. And that's what concerns me as a media guy. You know, media is about saying, no, let's figure this out. There's a way to come together. If we have information, we can figure it out. The problem is the information that we're getting now sometimes is so tainted that it's hard to figure out what the right way is.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we try to create our own and we find ourselves shadow banned. We find ourselves labeled and judged and called names, deplatformed, debanked, you know, so it's a big fight. And it's like that government we're talking about over, you know, a number of administrations now has lowered the bar of what it actually means to, you know, to be, you know, happy and feeling that liberty, you know. And I think that's one of the reasons we always love having you on, because, you know, you understand the media environment and you understand that narrative pushing is one of the things that is behind the government being able to lower that bar. I'll give it to you for any final comments, and of course recommend that people check out your new book, 50 Years in a Newsroom, a Eulogy, before we got to let you go.
I think my final comment, and one to the courage of both of you to have this kind of program, but I also think that ultimately it's what's inside of us as individuals that matters. If we want personal freedom, we can fight for it, and we all fight in different ways. And I think that America knows that. We have a great intuitive sense of who we are and who we want to be. So I continue, as I always am, to be optimistic about the future. Thank you both for having me.
Thank you, Steve. And we've got to remain optimistic, because this still is the greatest country on earth. Again, that book is 50 Years in a Newsroom, a Eulogy. The author, Steve Cohen. You're a gentleman, sir, very erudite and insightful. Thanks again. We can't wait to have you back right here on State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
My name's Stacy. I'm 57, and I was adopted in 2020.
We were adopted in 2019.
And we were adopted in 2021.
We had a house, and it sounds crazy, but it wasn't a home. The one thing that Jake and Emma brought is it became a home.
When I met Dakota, he had just turned 14.
You weren't there for the first this and the first that. I missed the first words, but we got a lot of other firsts.
Watching her say, oh my God, I cannot believe I got my license. And she's like, I passed. And I'm like, girl.
See them grow. It is.
They chose to love us. They didn't have to. They chose us. Family.
You. And you.
Kids in the middle.
What I thought was a complete life was nowhere near complete, but it is now.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Around here, bushfire is just a part of life. We've been through it before, and we'll get through it again. The people here all look out for each other. We're a community that does its bit to plan and prepare, to keep everyone safe. We live with bushfire, so we live bushfire ready.
The challenges our planet's animals are facing sometimes feel a bit heavy.
The animals haven't eaten in a day, 2 days, they haven't drank anything, they're cold, they're dehydrated.
As soon as we started our descent, everywhere I could see was mud, just absolutely mud.
The country has been in prolonged drought so long, it was like a tinderbox waiting to go up.
Okay, very heavy. Each of us wants to be part of the solution, and we can be. Remember that there's good happening right now. At home.
All right, we were able to get into your unit, and we have all four of your cats.
Okay. And around the world. For any animal in any disaster. So let's focus on that, right? Be part of the solution, one rescue at a time. Search ifa.org/disaster-ready.
The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McLean and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT.
Coachella Music Fest is a well-known multi-day music and cultural event in Indio, California. I've actually attended it back in 2010. I had a great time, saw some bands I really enjoyed. I got to see Porcupine Tree, Dillinger Escape Plan, Faith No More, Orbital, Florence and the Machine, Tom York, and Flea, just to name a few, just to drop a few names there. It was a great time. It was an excited crowd. But apparently things have changed over the years, and I've noticed this as I look at their lineup year to year. I recognize fewer and fewer bands on it. I always recognize the headliners, but the rest not so much. When I was there, there was 70-plus thousand people there. I think it totaled out about 75,000 people. And it was the most massive crowd I've ever been in. When I was watching particularly Thom Yorke and Flea for their set, it really felt like all 75,000 people were in front of that particular stage. There's between five and seven stages there. It's amazing. People camp there. I didn't really like the camping part. That's another story I'll save for another time, because even now, massive bands are disappointed by the crowd response. And joining us now to discuss is our friend Baezlet Analyzer, founder of the Baezlet Analyzer YouTube channel. Baezlet, isn't it amazing to see some of the nation's premier music fest degrade into a bunch of TikTok-brained Tyler, the Creator fans?
It really is amazing. Something crazy happened this year with Coachella. And first of all, your story is awesome, because hearing that you saw Faith No More in Orbital is awesome. Oh, and then Flea and Thom Yorke. I've seen Radiohead and Red Hot Chili Peppers, and both of those were in Ireland. But I've never been to Coachella. But something weird happened this year as far as the coverage, especially the coverage of Coachella. And we know that over the past few years, it's become more, it's not a surprise that it's become more and more corporate, and, you know, but it is a surprise that it's become, I mean, almost singularly known this year for being a TikTok and influencer concert venue. I mean, it's crazy. All the coverage that I saw this year was almost completely negative on the whole. And I think this came to a head with the coverage of Damon Albarn and the Blur set. Which sort of typified this. So Damon Albarn, who's the lead singer of Blur, Blur reunited for this, and this Blur is like, you know, Britpop, Blur Oasis, the Britpop wars of years and years ago. But to see the clip of him saying, you know, right, well, you know, this is the last time you'll see us, so you better cheer. Right? And the crowd's like, what? No one there's heard of Blur. You know, which is, I mean, as we get older, I know that we're going to know fewer and fewer bands that are playing at these festivals. But this one was, it's crazy because the dystopia has really become now. I mean, seeing the outside view of people making TikToks and making, you know, clips, but from a third party perspective where there's no music involved, but you're at a music festival and there's people like dancing in circles for a video camera instead of for the music at the set where you are, is almost like pure Hunger Games. It's very weird. I don't know. What do you guys think about it?
Well, I think you guys are both missing the bigger story here, right? If things keep going the way that they're going, the three of us could put together a group. We can call ourselves, I don't know what, Brian, Pig Slaughter Mayhem or something like that. And we can get a TikTok channel and maybe we can realize our Coachella dreams.
Yeah. I've always wanted a band called Fat Elvis and the Milkshake Machines. I thought that would be a very cool.
I like that.
But no, you're right. I mean, also the price of the tickets is unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, you know, I was watching a clip of a guy, an investor in music the other night, and he was saying that, you know, some of the big artists can make up to $10 million a night for touring. So touring has always been the big money maker for bands. You know, you make money with a contract and then you spend it all, you know, back in studio time and all the various things that you owe the record company or whatever. But the touring has always been the big lucrative thing. But that being said, like, how can any regular person afford to, first of all, fly to Coachella and then buy tickets to the thing? And it's thousands and thousands of dollars. It's unbelievable. I mean, most people can hardly afford like a $3 dollar menu now in the time we're in. And it's this crazy thing where this strata of social elite has become the TikTok influencer. And there's nothing against that. I'm just saying it's bizarre. It reminds me of when I first read Hunger Games, or, you know, when you're looking at Pan Am or even the symphonic festivals that they have in Brave New World. It's like everyone agrees with the thing. It's corporate sponsored. You're wearing a name the corporation sponsorship on your t-shirt and you're there to see bands that now people have completely forgotten about, if there are even bands anymore. So I hate to be a black pill about it. It's just extremely dystopian. I don't know. I'm not sure what else to say about it. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty sad, you know, that whole influencer culture and, you know, influencers and ambassadors just destroy everything. It's really sad, you know. It's like, I understand their purpose. I understand why people become them, how they become them. It's something that it just is now in our culture. It's kind of like Well, we just all have smartphones now, and every child has a smartphone, and you know, that's just the way it is now. It's the same with the influencers. It's just like you never know how much money they're being paid or what their actual motivations are. Yeah. And then to see that overshadow a music and culture festival like Coachella, you know, or anywhere, you know, I mean, gosh, I got to give it up to comedy clubs right now, because comedy clubs have figured this out. You can't even take your phone in the comedy club. You have to put it in a Faraday bag so that you have an actual human cultural experience. Instead of, even if you've decided to do that at a concert these days, you have to look above and around all, you know, 10,000 lit up cell phones. Like, these people are ever going to watch that video after they upload it to their TikTok or whatever, when they don't need to, because every other person is there videoing it. They could just enjoy it and reshare it. You know, and I I've taken videos at concerts before and photos. Like, I'm old enough. I've been to thousands of shows. I've been through the whole gamut of like, oh, this is so cool, I can now do this, to, you know, getting bored with that and going, wait a minute, now everyone's doing this. What am I doing with these videos? Are they any good? I'd way rather stand in front of Flea with no devices around me and watch him jam out.
Yeah, it's great.
That's the thing, because...
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
No, I was just going to say, that's exactly the thing, Brian. These people are watching their screens instead of watching the performers. So even though they're in attendance, they're getting a secondhand experience.
It's great points, guys. I mean, I think that early on when smartphones came out, you know, people like Taylor Swift obviously like harnessed this in cooperation with corporations. You know, everyone goes into the concert and it becomes like wearing the band, the smartphone band at Disney World, where they had early track and trace at those things. And then they're incorporated into the concert so that the cell phones light up and then it replaces the lighters in the old school. And that's fine. You know, it is what it is. But I think that what you were talking about, especially Hesher, is this thing, external memory syndrome, which is like your videos and your photos are never good when you're at the concert. You never get any recording. It's all garbled, and you want to use it because you think maybe this will be the good one, but they never turn out well. And it's your memories, it's your memory that actually plays a role in how special the event was. I don't know. I think that this also plays a factor in the sense that especially young people are walking around with the black mirror thing, but we all live in this world of selfies. And do you remember when selfies first became a thing like a decade ago, and it was odd and off-putting, and now that's ubiquitous and it's the normal thing. But what that does is it means that everybody stars in the story of their own life, in their own movie, in their own concert. And instead of enjoying the concert and making a memory with real life human beings, you're in the movie of your concert. And again, great for people who can get some sort of traction with social media and can get 3 million followers and can make millions of dollars. That's great. But in terms of how that's become widespread, and you go to Coachella and every single person is that, it's a little odd.
Well, it's not just Coachella, right? Burning Man is a shadow of its former self. And Baze, one of the things that you do is look at culture and see how it's changing. We can all point to exactly when our culture tipped. And that's when, you know, Chris Kardashian had Kim put out that sex tape, and bam, the Kardashians created an entire new way to live your life and living your best life and all of that nonsense. How much has all of this social media influencer, TikToking, et cetera, increased narcissism, the narcissist quotient of our culture?
Off the charts. I mean, it's a great point. Off the scales. That's the norm now. That's completely ubiquitous. And that plays a role in a lot of the social dynamics that we see, the thing that we've been going through over the past, you know, 4 years ago. Whole safety as far as one person is concerned. Forget about no matter what the social situation is or the thing is, it's become a thing where you are like living your own story and you're a brand and nobody else is important. The idea of service or, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you is like so antiquated with the average societal impact look at any sort of strata. I mean, I think it's funny in terms of how music festivals are on the front lines of seeing the how the paradigm is going to change, how things change. I mean, look at Burning Man. Remember Burning Man last year with the floods and the total destruction, people leave. There's always something that occurs at these music festivals. And it's something that's tested or something that's revelatory, something that's coming for the future. But I think that on the grand scale, it is alarming. And I'm not sure what is going to change it, because it's so alarming how every dystopian book, every dystopian movie has led to this inflection point. And the thing you just pointed out is exactly the thing. In the 90s, people thought that the real world on MTV was like, you know, the worst thing in the world. You're watching people live their lives all day, and there was talk of Big Brother. And then there's a TV show called Big Brother. But we've gone so far past that, where now we do this to ourselves. So I'm not sure what's going to change it, I guess, other than, you know, people having real life, meaningful relationships in real life and reaching out to people and continuing to play music regardless of a corporate sponsorship.
Right. And that's one of the things that you used to be able to engage in, at especially at a multi-day music festival. You used to meet new people. There was a lot of that. And I haven't been to Coachella in a long time, but I do know my concerts, and I have noticed that outside of the, you know, dingy metalhead concerts that I go to, people don't seem to be meeting each other. They don't seem to be making friends. They're definitely more into their phone and, you know, whoever they may have gone there with. You hear a lot of talking over the bands and stuff like that, not just your average, oh, that person's drunk sort of thing, but just all throughout. And, to the artist, I forget his name there, the Blur performer, he's not alone. I've seen multiple incidents on stage where the singers are like, what is, you know, can you guys pick it up a little bit? Show us you like having us here. Right. It's just amazing to see. And, you know, there, I looked at the lineup for Coachella this year. Some good bands, you know, I would have pretty much only wanted to see the Deftones and maybe Blur.
Yeah.
And I know that the Deftones put on a ripper show, and I would expect, you know, I've been in many Deftones audiences, and that audience should be the majority of the people there, and it should be hopping. And I bet if I was to tune in and look at some of the live footage of it, I would see their real fans up front doing that. And then a whole bunch of TikTok people and people wandering around with their necks bent down everywhere else in the venue.
Yeah, it's amazing how after all these years, I mean, the Woodstock 2 film came out, you know, talking about Limp Bizkit. But it is amazing how there's been a resurgence of shoegaze and new metal music especially amongst young people, which would probably be a surprise to people our age or older that would be popular again. And I love electronic music as much as, I mean, I love electronic music, and I usually love the Coachella lineup, but it's amazing to see that Limp Bizkit, you know, you mentioned Deftones at Coachella. That's crazy. I would never have thought of that 10 years. Limp Bizkit is pulling huge audiences on a worldwide tour full of young people. So I find that promising. I think that the whole thing about, you know, music concerts, about big festivals, and especially about like a former MTV generation, and about smartphones and the internet in general, is this message that's been pushed on us of like, be a rebel, be yourself. And I find that ironic with Coachella, where it becomes, of course, it becomes a thing where it's sponsored by Big Pharma, right? It's you better fit in with the way we're doing things or else come to our music festival in Pan Am and make TikTok videos, and then we'll sponsor you. The same people are sponsoring you. So it's so ironic. I can't help but laugh about it. But I think that it's there's something happening that I think is promising for the future, some sort of tide of moving back into music with, you know, with feeling, and hopefully that will continue to happen, because I know it's not happening with the movies. I keep going through a string of new movies, and it's just the same. It's just AI or lack of human connection. It's very synthetic and pretty alarming.
Yeah. Well, to Timothy's point earlier, when true artists sense that corporatism and true rebellious spirit senses that corporatism, they will look backward and they will look forward to times when things were more to their liking or where they would like them to come back to. And that is going to breed a lot of good art and music, I hope, because this whole collectivist, milquetoast, corporate stuff, is really wearing thin on people, and it shows at Coachella. Baze, thanks so much for being here. You got any streams coming up you want to shout out? You got about 30 seconds.
Yeah, catch me at Bazelit Analyzer at YouTube doing continuous literary streams. I'll be back soon with something on drone warfare and full spectrum dominance coming up and more literature. Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend. Love you all. Be good to each other. Peace.
All right. Thank you, Bazed. Go to his channel and subscribe if you haven't yet. Always great stuff up there. Find him in the boiler room with me and the other homies over there. Also, every Thursday night. Timothy, thank you so much for everything you do and being here for today's News Talk. Always a pleasure. I'll see you Monday. And stay tuned for the Jason Burmes Show coming up next.